Today's show, National Signing Day. Florida up. Clemson? Question marks. Some great double flips. Plus, we pick every championship game of championship weekend. The race for the case.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
An arsenal of Bush Light.
Ross Dellinger.
Who needs to cover and screw you, Dan.
And SI's Pat Forty.
The least enthusiastic hookup I've ever heard.
Here's Pat, Ross, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and we're going to get to the race for the case championship game weekend. I got a 3-game lead on you bozos.
Yeah, much bigger lead on me.
Oh, yeah. 3-game lead on Joe. Well, you're eliminated.
Yeah.
Magic
eliminated
number.
From contention. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's all right. We're going to go to the beach. Screw this weekend. We're going to the beach, you know, getting the coaches, letting the coaches off. You know, spending some of that potential buyout money when we get fired.
It's okay. Fire the coordinators.
Yeah. Yep. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
You're under 500. I am just close to that sweet, sweet 30 rack of Busch Lights coming my way. So we're going to get to the games. We've been
Thank
talking.
Thank God you're a cheap winner at least.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll need to up it. Then I can re-gift them. How can I make this work
Speaking
for me?
Cheap, good God.
The
regifting beer.
I don't know. I'm trying to think. Just give me some time on this. You guys should pick better. We've discussed tons of the playoff debate. We have an ethos here. We don't want the show to be only about the playoff, which is why we didn't spend like hours just flipping out over week one rankings. And there's other teams. There's lots of teams in this sport, and some of them are going to the playoffs or even in contention. But they did have national signing early period opening day. Not as good as the old national signing day. It's not as exciting as before because of the portal. I feel like this is just the start of when the announcers have to say so-and-so transferred in from. Which I always find funny. They'll be like, This running back transferred. He was at Troy last year. Like, I don't remember that. It's not like they're like super famous players. But anyway, there was all
you
sorts
remember
of.
Remember, it was 842 rushing yards and 6 touchdowns at Troy.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, that's right. Like who knew? Who remembered that? Who's sitting there going, I've heard that name before. There were a lot of flips. It was flipmas. The word commit. Really doing a lot of work in high school recruiting these days. I had a listener, reader say the term should be alleged. Jimmy alleges he's going to sign with Texas. I think that's what we should go with. There were no real commits. They were just alleged. But there were some big gets. So I'm not going to go through all these recruiting classes and say, hey, let's... Big news, Texas recruited well, Georgia, like some, of course they did. The usual suspects did really well. It's kind of more like the ones that are a little bit surprising. And I want to start with Florida, the Gators. Most of these recruiting sites, rivals, things like that, have them like 10, 11. Did anyone make a better move, at least in the short term here, than Scott Strickland, the Gator AD, announcing in early November that Billy Napier, who there was tons of speculation about and was kind of floundering about, would be back? He just preemptively said Billy Napier would be the coach of the Gators, will continue as head football coach of Florida Gators. Since then, they picked up 13 recruits that they all signed. 7 of them were 4-star, 1 was 5-star, and they won their final 3 games, and they have a ton of momentum going into the offseason. Excellent preemptive. Usually the vote of confidence is not a good thing, but sure worked in Gainesville.
Yeah, I think that their overall patience this season paid off for them. I mean, a lot of people were sure he was getting fired 3 games into the year. and they were 1-2 and they looked hopeless, and they stayed the course and they did better on the field. And to your point, they're doing better off the field. And I do think it's probably at least assumed and understood that DJ Lagway, their rising star quarterback, is probably going to stay as a great piece to build around for 2025. He got great experience. They played well around him, better and better as the season went along. And now, yeah, you've brought in this better than expected class. So, you know, we saw across the board nationally people kind of holding their fire in terms of firing coaches, and we're seeing some benefits from that there. And Baylor turned its season around. Arkansas had a decent season and landed a couple of recruits. I'll talk about them in a little bit. But Florida, I think, is a great exemplar of that right now.
Yeah, I can't. I really can't remember, you know, an AD coming out and you know, saying that the coach is staying and then such good things happening. You know, winning three of the last with the last three. But you guys remember we made a big deal out of Florida's last five games. During the offseason, Georgia, Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, Florida State. And, you know, we all kind of thought, man, if you can win two of those, it's pretty good. Certainly three, and they won the last three, LSU, Ole Miss, and Florida State. Florida State probably not as good as we all had imagined they'd be. But still, it was impressive what they did. And like Pat said, you know, the quarterback is pretty incredible. I mean, when you watch some of the slow-mo, some of the replays of his throws on the run across his body, the way he times it and the accuracy. Man, I mean, it's really, really impressive. You know, that was part of keeping Billy Napier and making that decision when they did is that there's a relationship and a bond there between the quarterback and the coach. But, Dan, it's crazy transfer portal season, so everybody's got their price. So it seems like no quarterback is like safe to stay at their school. But yeah, incredible stuff going on in Gainesville. I think people would have guessed right now, you know, a month or so ago that Billy Napier wouldn't be the coach. They'd be in the middle of a coaching search and probably not doing very good in recruiting.
All right, on the flip side here, concerns for Clemson. They signed only 15 players so far. They're ranked 31st, 36th, different stuff with the recruiting sites, 31st on Rivals. Dabo Swinney's comparing it to his first class, which only had a dozen. I think he called them the Dandy Dozen. Calls them a special group. I am sure they are all quite special and quite dedicated. But this is the lowest rated group since 2010 for Clemson. And this is not a school that uses the transfer portal. They signed 15, like Colorado signed 14. But we know how they look at recruiting. One of their bigger decommits was a four-star safety from North Carolina who flipped over to Michigan. And he was on WBTV in Charlotte. And he said, this is why. He said the recruiting class wasn't that good at Clemson. I was the only DB at the time, so didn't really see a bright future with that. It's one kid. There's a gazillion flips, blah, 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 but that's not kind of the thing you want to do. Clemson has always recruited very well in the high school ranks, and then part of their struggles has been, well, are you filling those gaps with the transfer portal? 15 kids isn't going to be enough, I wouldn't think, Pat.
Nope. That's it would indicate to me one of a couple of things is happening. Either Dabo is going to change and hit the portal, and he's saving scholarships for that, or he's hoping he's going to make some inroads, some catch up here as this signing period stays open, or they're just flat out in trouble. You know, and you can have a down recruiting class and still maintain a very good program if it's surrounded by other good recruiting classes. But given the gradual overall decline of the program and given Dabo's unwillingness up to this point to engage in quote-unquote quick fixes, he's either changing philosophy or this thing's going to slide further.
Yeah. But the first thing I think of is, right, well, maybe this is the year that he starts mining the portal. I think it's, I want to say, two transfers that he's brought in the last few years. And one of them was previously already there. The quarterback, backup quarterback was already there originally, and he brought him back. And it's not like he hasn't, we talked about this before, it's not like he hasn't tried, right? Because they've been in the mix for some guys. I know they're in the mix for a couple offensive linemen maybe last offseason, and just didn't get them. You know, I always tell the story of sitting in his office maybe 2 years ago, and I think I said, like, when are you going to start, you know, getting transfers in? And he said, well, Ross, when people start leaving, but nobody's leaving, I don't have room. Nobody leaves little old Clemson. So there's that point, too. You do have to have attrition.
Yeah, and I think one of his appeals, who said this many times, like, ideally, the way he does this would work. It's kind of how you would want to be treated as a player. I'm going to believe in you. You're going to come in. You're going to develop, and I'm not going to recruit over you. I'm not going to push you out the door. You are my guy, and we're going to show loyalty to you. And that's always been one of the things about this whole complaining about the transfer portal is, you know, coaches understand this is loyalty is a two-way street, and it is at Clemson. And so they kind of wish this would work. What's kind of interesting to me is that, and obviously we don't know who they're going after, what. But clearly, players aren't flocking to that philosophy. There's not 25 great players saying, I want that. And that's kind of interesting to me, because that should be a really nice appeal on a recruiting thing is what he's selling. And it doesn't seem to be finding a ton of buyers right now. So we'll see who they add. I'm sure they'll add some more players. But it's not like, I mean, it's almost like 97 of the top 100 players are gone. It's not like there's this swell of guys out there for Clemson.
Yeah, it's a dwindling market, that's for sure. So if he's looking for the fix within this recruiting class, he better get on his horse.
My favorite player from signing day, there wasn't a lot of drama. We didn't get the drama of past days. It's kind of, like I said, it's muted. But Tyler Lockett is from Mississippi, and he was committed to play for Mississippi State. His older brother, TJ, plays as an offensive lineman there. And then all of a sudden on signing day, he flips to Ole Miss. Classic in-state rival flip that infuriates fans and the whole bit. And then he did his announcement of his commitment at his high school. He took off his jacket and unveiled a white shirt with the Ole Miss Rebel logo. Then 3 hours later, he signed with Mississippi State. The rare single day double flip.
Only in Mississippi, Dan. Oh, only in the SIP.
Yeah.
Ross, what happened? Did you pony up? Did you jump in on the NIL and get the double flip for TJ Tyler Lockett?
My journalism salary, we dumped a bunch of money into the collective to get the 18-year-old. That's what I want to do with my money, Dan. Yes, perfect. The old Egg Bowl rivalry, recruiting rivalry. It's I heard a little bit of the backstory to this. I don't think I could share it though, Dan. I don't think it was made for public consumption.
We're all friends here. Who's listening? Just talking amongst friends.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, just 25,000 people. That's right. Typical. I haven't seen one like this. The signing day flip on the actual flip on signing day, but
the double flip,
pretty the double flip. Yeah, the double flips, flip,
but yeah, the yeah. double flip.
Yeah. Yeah, the double flip like that. I'm not sure I've seen that. So this one will leave a little mark. I saw my social last night, a bunch of all this celebration, because I didn't pay attention to much to signing day. I didn't, I have to say. But then this caught my attention, obviously. And all these Mississippi State folks were certainly celebrating, including their collective director was tweeting out some stuff. I think he tweeted out like a WWE wrestling, you know, video. So they're happy down there in Stark Vegas. Anything to get at the Rebels, Dan?
See, in the good old days, they would have given him a cowbell stuffed with cash to make the double flip, you know. But now it's just, what's your collective got? What has our collective got? And maybe there's some other stuff involved, it sounds like. Who knows? But that's a good one. That is a good, there's so many of these great SEC back and forth stories. Who came in with the last bid? Or whatever the case may be. So that is a good one. Give us a little juice back in the Egg Bowl, please.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Maybe just really, he realized he made a mistake. He wanted to study at Mississippi State. We don't know. Poor Lane Kiffin, he had him for 3 hours. It's like this kid's got he's like the Sebastian, the Ibis of signing day.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Gets down on a knee, and then now he's back with Gigi the Ibis.
Yeah.
Trying to pretend it's all good.
One thing when Ole Miss obviously counted on him being in their class. And when you have a kind of a miss like that, back in the old days, you were really screwed.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you for a whole year or so or plus, you were really. And now it's not that big a deal. Right. You just dip right into the portal, sure. Especially with the resources that Ole Miss has when the portal opens, and go get you a linebacker there.
Now, if you feel like all this generation is lost, I'll give you the story of Devin Sanchez, who's the number one cornerback in the country and is said to be a ridiculous talent. He's from Houston, North Shore. He committed to Ohio State in January, and by all accounts, that was it. No visits, no chatting up other schools, no social media, posts that got other schools excited. Coaches who texted him or kept trying to recruit him were just sort of politely rebuffed. And 11 months later, 12 months later, signed with the Ohio State Buckeyes. The rare, yeah. I know we're, this is like house doesn't burn down, but kid wanted to be a Buckeye. He's a Buckeye. No wishy-wash. I mean, who knows? Transfers in a year. I'll just look like an idiot. But hey, good job, Devin.
There you go. That's unlike the two guys from Long Beach Poly, Dan, who became Arkansas's gain and UCLA's pain.
Mm.
One of whom is Nico Iamaleava's younger brother, Madden, also a quarterback. Top 150 guy for ESPN and other rankings, highly thought of, and he's from SoCal, and he and his Long Beach Poly teammate, Jace Brown, had both been committed to UCLA, and then they both flip at the last minute and sign with Arkansas. Big get for Arkansas.
Really big.
Yeah. Tough loss for Deshaun Foster with his highest-rated recruit leaving. But as usual, we're going to practice safe hype here. As the story from Eli Letterman, ESPN.com points out, that Madden Iamaleava is the highest rated quarterback for Arkansas since Malik Hornsby in 2020.
Mm.
Malik Hornsby is now playing wide receiver at Arkansas State. So hopefully his career's happy. He's happy with his career, but not every highly rated player turns out to be a star.
Yeah, a lot of flips. Honestly, the number of flips yesterday, flipping is now just the thing.
Yeah.
So right. Those guys. So it was my favorite. My favorite flip was the Reuben Foster from Auburn to Alabama after he got Reuben, the great Reuben Foster, got an Auburn tattoo. That was a great one. I mean, that's commitment. That's not alleged. That's not nothing. There's no commitment. There's really no. It's alleged. I'm allegedly signing here, but we don't know. One other class I was kind of, we're going to see if he can land this final offensive tackle, Josh Petty, but Georgia Tech, Brett Key, they have three top 100 players, two signed and maybe this last one, you know, which isn't Georgia, it isn't Ohio State, it isn't Alabama and all that. But for Georgia Tech, that is pretty nice. And I just feel like that program is just on, got a pop of energy and is on the rise. I mean, obviously they lost the eight overtime game, but that was probably great marketing for the program.
Yeah.
Everyone watched.
No. I mean, everything is going well there. And I think even their AD, Jay Batt, had been up or rumored up for the South Carolina job, and he's staying at Georgia Tech. Brent Key seems to be happy at his alma mater. They're getting players. They're playing well. They're the absolute upset monsters of the country at this point with some of the wins they've pulled off, including beating Miami and putting Miami so far out of the playoffs. So really one of those intriguing programs to watch here as we're going forward.
Yeah, that was going back probably a couple years, maybe there was an interesting coaching search there. You know, Brent Key was the interim coach, and there was a big push made to keep him there, you know, and promote him. But I'll never forget, you know, Willie Fritz was at Tulane at the time, and he was, for all intents and purposes, had agreed, I think, to be the coach at Georgia Tech, but wanted to coach his conference championship game. Kind of like a situation like this, this week, with a lot of these coaches wanting to coach their conference championship game and not commit to jobs. And he didn't want to commit to it. And so they gave the job to Brent Key, and, man, he's just taken it and ran with it. It's been, incredible to watch. They play really hard, and yeah, they should have 100%. They should have beat Georgia, and they should be sitting, even better right now, probably finishing the top 25, but it's incredible what they've done. And, you know, also, you know, Pat mentioned Jay Batt, the athletic director, who was at Alabama for a while, certainly knows how to run a football program. One thing they did about a month ago, I don't think we talked about it on the show, but they hired one of the Chicago Bears front office executives to go run their salary cap, basically. So they seem to be pretty serious about this thing, and are kind of ahead of some others probably when it comes to the rev share and rev share agreements and guarantees probably to players.
Yeah, good future at Georgia Tech. All right, we'll be back. Get to Brian Kelly here. He had some NIL comments, but before that, I'll preface it by saying this. Because I've done this research for a long time, and this is how I certainly understand the decrying of NIL, but, and I know I make the point often that so many people were wrong that this would ruin the competitive balance of college football. And for a long time, I thought it would have no impact. It's actually had a significant, much more significant impact than I predicted there, or any of the economists and things like that that I spoke to. This year, the top 100 recruits, and I always go to 100 because that's about like a top three draft pick in the NFL. There's about 100 players in the top three drafts, three rounds of a draft. Top 100. So from the five cycles before NIL, 2017 to 2021, if you just took the top five schools, like kids are always going to flock to more, you know, to the good schools. Good players are going to go to good schools. But the top five in the rankings each year averaged signing 45.4 of the top 100 players each year. So 45% of the best players were going to just five schools. And if you stretch that back all the way to 2011, it was 43.7%. So 44-45% of kids before NIL were going to five schools. Now, sometimes those five varied. You know, some year it'd be LSU, some year it'd be Florida State, something like that. But every year it was Alabama. But you had Alabama and Georgia one year got 24 kids just between them. Okay, 14. I mean, they were loading up on the top 100. This year, by the count I've got, there's still some players. Alabama's getting 8, Texas is getting 8, Ohio State 6, Georgia 6, Oregon 6, and A&M 6. So if you just take 5 of those, that's 34. There might be a 35th, but that is 10 less kids a year in the top 100 that are going to are coagulating at those top 5. Those 10 are going somewhere else. Now, it spreads out. Maybe it's Kansas State keeping a tight end home. Maybe it's Georgia Tech jumping up and grabbing a few guys. Maybe it's Mississippi State got a guy. SMU got a guy. Missouri got a few. Stanford always would get like one. Different things, but it's evening out, and it's 10 less that are going to those same schools, and it's 10 more going somewhere else. It slightly weakens and slightly improves, right, other players. So NIL is a significant impact on how talent gets dispersed in the country, even before we get to the transfer portal. And it's a pretty stark number that I think is irrefutable about how this is impacting recruiting.
Yeah, great stats. That's the proof is in the numbers, and I dare say I think the proof is on the field.
Yeah. Well, take this year's championship games this weekend. You've got I think you got 6 conference championship games that include, you know, involve a team that's in their first year in that league. So we could have 6 teams win their league in their first year. And I think that speaks to some of the parity as well that's been spread across, and not just with specifically NIL, but obviously the portal and some of the quarterbacks specifically that move around. I mean, look at the programs in the championship game in the playoff contention. I think half or more than half have a transfer quarterback. So the talent is no doubt in the top 30 or 40 programs in the country is spread out. And I actually was talking to Rhett Lashley, the SMU coach, and Jim Phillips, ACC commissioner, earlier this week about that. I don't remember the exact quote, but Jim Phillips said something like, you know, we got to stop looking at the logos and the school colors and all that, because it's changed now. It's changed with the parity. Obviously, he was speaking to the selection committee, but he's probably right. Got some truth there in that.
Yeah, it's just the way recruiting is going. Brian Kelly, LSU, spoke at his press conference about NIL. The quotes are a little, I don't know how to put them, direct or maybe jarring if you just read them. If you actually listen to him, it was a pretty good answer. He was just pretty much being honest, but he wasn't really complaining. But he had a line, today feels more like tax day than it does signing day. It's kind of funny. Scrambling the last few days. It's unlike any recruiting period that I've ever been involved in. This is the new landscape that we're in. It's not just about finding the right fit academically. It's not just about finding right where you can develop holistically and graduate and play for a champion. It's where the most money that I can get, and that's unfortunate. I would certainly take issue with that. I always look at it like this. Every one of these schools is a pretty great place to go play football. And so I don't know what he's talking about. He had a few kids flip away from him, obviously Bryce Underwood being one. But like, it's not like LSU is a fantastic place to go to school and play football. But it's not like, well, you're going to play at some junkyard at University of Michigan, right? Like, also a great place. So I don't, you know, the coaches always think the other places have nothing to offer or something. How could you possibly turn us down? I think the margins are pretty small between all these places on where you're going. But certainly he was very direct about it. And he basically asked the LSU boosters and everybody, all LSU fans, to start kicking in or they're going to lose some kids at the end. Maybe that's because of money. Maybe that's because of Brian Kelly. Maybe that's because kids are looking to go anywhere they want to go now.
Yeah. Among those they lost at the end, Jakeem Stewart, Edna Carr High School, New Orleans, a absolute powerhouse in terms of producing talent. He's 17 years old. He's 6'6", 266, defensive end lineman type, reclassified and went into this class and lost him to USC at the end. And, I mean, that's tough when you're losing a stud out of New Orleans to USC. Big get for USC. We'll see, though. This, again, he's only 17 years old. This guy may take a couple of years to get on the field and really to be able to produce. Our friend Jeff Duncan, NOLA.com, Times Picayune, had a good story. Kind of a wild recruitment, a little bit murky there. Who all's involved and who's helping him make decisions? But that's another one that got away from LSU. But in this day and age, he may also come back in a year or two.
A New Orleans kid has a wild recruitment, huh?
Never heard that before,
suspicious people around him potentially pushing him one way or the other, huh? Yeah. Doesn't sound familiar at all.
That's not the New Orleans I know.
Yeah, that's right. Usually it's good, clean. Yeah.
That's right.
They also, LSU flipped a five-star from, or potential five-star from, yeah, I think it was a five-star. I don't know. Some of them, four or five. Yeah. There's a lot of fives out there. Anyway, they flipped the Florida State commit at the end, too. So it works both ways.
Yeah.
It does. I just feel like they're like, well, he flipped because this is the greatest place to go to school. And if you flip from us, it's because somebody cheated. And it's like,
yeah, that's right. Right. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
I do also know a coach who used to tell his staff, said, do not come in here and tell me we lost a kid because they cheated. I don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
That's my theory. Cheat better. That would be
you cheat
idea.
Too. Yeah, right. cheat better than them. That's right. You know, it. I'm just fascinated by what's going on right now, and it's going to get even more fascinating when the portal opens with schools. And we've talked about this before. I had a story about a month ago, but schools, you know, combining rev share guarantees that start in July with these kids, combining them with collective deals until then, and what schools can get a better price and all that stuff, and how schools are distributing the rev share is fascinating, and front loading this money so it doesn't count next year. I mean, there's just a lot going on, and I wonder if some of these flips are you can attribute maybe to some of this at places who aren't as organized or not offering a certain amount. But you know, it also always comes down to these kids want to play as soon as possible. Right. And so I think that still seems to be, like, when you talk to coaches right now in the on the recruiting trail, like, that still seems to be the number one thing, is how quickly can I get on the field? But number two, three, and four do seem to be money, as opposed to, you know, 5 years ago.
But when everybody can give a little money, I mean, all I know is this, that all the hand wringing, kids are going to college to play football. Teams are being fielded. Games are being played. Someone's winning. Someone's losing. It's all going fine. And if anything, the stats completely bear out that, and the results, that talent is distributing. And so I say this stuff because the conventional wisdom in college football is often wrong, and they want to make dramatic, head-spinning moves that have great impact based on very small samples and fear and complaints from loud coaches. And it's like the same people that said the playoff would ruin the regular season, the same people that said fans wouldn't watch if a player gets any money on a commercial, the same people that said everyone, you know, the competitive balance would be thrown off, the same people that said all this stuff is wrong. They're always wrong. And they're going to go and come up with the next thing. Someone pointed out this example. We had one crazy Texas A&M LSU play overtime game, and they came up with this soccer shootout type style just as a response, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so now we could have a national championship decided on 2-point conversions.
I'm telling you, we're going to have a playoff game where that's going to be the case.
Because they panicked over one game. There's just such a lack of foresight and such a lack of perspective in these decisions. And so all these people are going to go to Congress and lobby again. The crap they were lobbying for 4 years ago is all wrong. But we have to believe it. And I get it's like, this is the establishment. So people are upset because players are going to other schools. It's not like it's the wild, wild west. Who cares? They're going somewhere. It's not like they're not playing college football. They're just going somewhere else. Hey, Georgia Tech figured it out. Now they got three kids going to Georgia Tech. This is not a national problem. So be wary of the head coach-driven expertise of anything. Because, yeah, that overtime thing is a great example. It's like, why do we have this? Oh, there was this one game. One game took too many plays, and we were in that throes of, like, you know, player safety was the big thing at the time. We can't have this many snaps, and so they just came up with this thing. I don't know that it's less is it that many less snaps? I don't know. Seems like it's hard to score two-point conversions. Anyway, that's my soapbox. Signing day used to be better. They need to move it to the spring.
Oh, so yes. Badly.
Yeah, move it back. February.
They moved it up, and we understand why, because people want to know with the portal and signing what their rosters are going to look like. Yeah. But it's even more in the middle of everything now than it was when it was December 18th or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just.
Let me give you an example. This kid, Madden Faramo, believe is how you say it. He is from Sarah Catholic out in California, big powerhouse. He was expected to go to USC. And then on the the opening of the signing period, he's a linebacker, really good linebacker. And USC's linebacker coach, Matt Entz, gets the Fresno State job that day. So maybe this was in the works before, maybe not, but he flips to Notre Dame because his position coach isn't there anymore. Well, what if Matt Entz gets the job at Fresno State a day later? And that is the reason. It's not Fresno State's job to hire a coach. Like, they're just doing their due diligence. They're going to hire when they want to. First off, why are we hiring coaches signing? That's hard enough for Fresno. But, like, that kid, all these kids and their families need to know who the heck is coaching me. So just on that personal level, that's the Wild West. Hey, great. Welcome to the class. I'm heading to Fresno. Thanks for signing the, you know, whatever.
We see this bait and switch with staffs after the February signing. All of a sudden, 57 assistants are changing jobs.
Yep.
Once the class is signed, you're out.
Yeah, it's not coincidental, right, that when these coaching shifts happen. It is crazy. It didn't feel like signing day anymore. You know, it didn't feel like it yesterday. I was talking to one Power 5 conference coach who said that it was – you know, for years, he had gotten up on signing day really, really early, like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And he put on a suit and tie, you know, and go into the office. And now he's like, I came in like my pajamas basically at like 8 a.m. You know, it's just so it's different for them too.
Yeah.
It's different. All right. We'll be back with championship weekend games and the final race for the case. All right, race for the case standings here. Yes, I am in first place. Yes, genius at work.
Moving 46, on. Moving
46, on. 37 and 1. Joe, producer Joe, 43, 40 and 1. Pat, 42, 41 and 1. Ross, 38, 44 and 2. I'd still like to say we all did pretty well.
We did.
Considering we picked these games before we know about injuries. Before we know about weather, and often against spreads that are not indicative of what it comes to at the end. Plus, we have to pick games we don't want to pick. Joe throws like these 1-point spreads in there on us. Like,
I'm just trying to. Okay, you want me to pick blowouts? Is that
no? I'm just saying. I think we all did pretty well.
We did. We did, especially since, you know, frankly, picking games is not what we really signed up to do in this job. It's part of it, but. Not really our expertise.
I never signed up, but I'm 9 games above 500 and staring down a whole bunch of Bush Light, an arsenal of Bush Light my way, something else that I ordered. We'll see.
I'll just Venmo you the $7, however much it's going to cost for a case of Bush Light.
So funny. All right, let's discuss a little bit of the games. Well, we can be a little more expansive. I don't know how big these games are or not. Other than for seeding. Like, I don't.
Well, I mean, there's a couple that are pretty big, right? The winner of the Big 12 championship is a play-in game.
But, you know, like the narrative around it. But
yeah,
we'll start there. Mountain West, UNLV. It's at Boise State. Boise State is giving 4 points. The game is Friday. 8 p.m. on Fox. I think I said in one of the episodes earlier this week, like this will be maybe the highest rated Mountain West game ever, which is cool. This is what the playoff does. It makes games like this matter. People want to know who's getting in and who might be playing. Would Boise be? What's seeding? There's a lot of extra interest in this. Pat, I'll start with you. What do you think of this game? And then you can make a pick as you kind of discuss it, I guess. I don't know how.
Yeah. Awesome game. Very excited for this and excited for these programs that they get this big game to get into the bracket. This is something, you know, I've just wanted forever is for the schools from that level to at least have a chance to get on the field in a game like they're going to play in the playoff, whoever wins this one. So it's fantastic. Biggest Mountain West game since Colin Kaepernick against Kellen Moore in 2010, although that might have been the whack. I really don't remember. But it's big. It's on the blue turf. Ashton Gentry, another great element of this season. This is such an unusual Heisman Trophy race. We have a two-way wide receiver defensive back versus a running back from Boise State to win it. This is Gentry's last chance to put on a show. We'll see how he does, but he's going up against a defense that did the best job on him of anybody all season, held him to 3.88 yards per carry, his lowest. Barry Odom can D it up. He can draw it up. My question is, as much as Barry Odom, I'm sure, wants to win this game, and I'm sure is locked in on Boise State, there's still in the back of his mind the fact that he may get hired somewhere else. And a lot of people want to talk to him and are probably talking to his agent. And some coaches do pretty well blocking that out and some don't. I don't know where he falls in that. But I do know going to play on the blue turf is going to be tough. And I like Boise to win the game and cover the number here.
Yeah, these two met in Vegas. It was a good game. Boise won. But I think on the blue turf, I'm agreeing with Pat. I think Boise covers the number. It's funny, you know. Ashton Gentry did have his worst game, as Pat mentioned, against UNLV. He still had 128 yards in a touchdown, and he had a few receptions too. So you just can't hold them down too much. What strikes me about this game is, you know, these are two of the best rushing teams in the country. UNLV actually averages more rushing yards than Boise State per game, around like 230 or 225. So ground and pound, probably a really short game. But yeah, on the blue turf, give me the Broncos.
I think the one big thing for me, and you guys talk about this a lot, I am such a huge advocate for playing football outside in frigid weather. We get to this point of the year, we need to stop going in these damn domes. You mentioned it's on the blue turf. Why would anyone pick UNLV in this situation? UNLV plays inside at Allegiant Stadium. They play and they reside in Las Vegas. There's no way that they're going to be able to acclimate to the weather. We saw and we see all the time at the end of the NFL season, the snow, the cold, how much it impacts West Coast teams or when Miami has to travel to go play at Kansas City. I don't know how anyone would take UNLV in this, but Boise should be able to cover. They run the ball so well, and nothing is worse than getting hit by an offensive line that's running the ball every single play, that's used to it when you don't like playing in the cold. So Boise covering feels like a lock.
Should be about 32 degrees at kick.
When was last time it was 32 in Las Vegas?
They do have some desert cold at night, but you know what? They ain't practicing.
But not during the game.
They're not practicing.
They go inside then, yeah. Your bowl people are going to get angry at you. Watch out, Joe. You get on that list, man.
Joe's advocating for the Green Bay Bowl.
God forbid. God forbid you advocate for football being played in home stadiums. Interesting here, too. Gentry, 2,288 yards this season. He has broken the 2,000 mark. Nobody does it anymore. No one's done it, and I don't know when the last one was. The all-time mark, of course, is the great Barry Sanders, 2,628. Now, Barry Sanders only played 11 games. This would be Gentry's 13th. However, Barry Sanders had 344 carries. Gentry only has 312. Barry Sanders' numbers his last year at Oklahoma State they've just always been like, like some of those baseball numbers. Who's the guy that has like 500 complete games pitching? Like they're like cartoon like numbers.
Grover Cleveland or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, it's like cart. Yeah. Like what? 2,628 yards, 7.6 yards per carry, and 37 touchdowns. Barry Sanders at Oklahoma State. And it seemed impossible. And Genty isn't there, but 2,288, 7.3 yards a carry, 28 touchdowns. And he's got 32 more carries to go. So let me do some quick math here. 32, 7.3, I don't know, whatever. He's going to come on short at that, but not by much. We'll see. You know, I think the fact that, and I would be so supportive of Ashton Genty's Heisman campaign. Like, if he wins it, that's great, because this is just ridiculous numbers. And I never thought we'd talk about anyone in the same breath as Barry Sanders' epic junior year at Oklahoma State, but here we are. It's just Travis Hunter plays both ways, 130 snaps a game, so it's hard. It's there's so many years where the Heisman race is so boring.
Right, and this year's fascinating. This,
yeah, these two guys. So I think this is a real chance. I think I've watched a bunch of Boise State this year, but I think it's a chance for everyone in the country who's heard about the guy, seen the highlights. Like, you're going to get to watch him. This is going to be a big-time NFL player. He is the real, real deal. He could have gone everywhere else. They got their collective together to keep him in Boise last year and keep him away from the Power Four schools that were desperate for him, obviously. And so it's a great showcase for him. As for the game, I will pick Boise State to cover that.
By the way, Dan, the ticket price, the get-in price for this game is the second highest one of all the championship games. Love higher it. Than the ACC, Big 12, Big 10. It only falls behind the SEC. At $42 is the last time I saw it as the get-in price.
42 is it? That's it, though. I mean, there's not a lot of supply.
Yeah.
Not a big stadium.
Nope, not a big 38,000. Seats 38,000, I believe. Yeah.
I do love what UNLV's done this year. It's what a great
fantastic
season.
Fantastic. Unbelievable.
Only losses are to Boise and to Syracuse, both at home. Yeah. So.
By the way, Dan, 2019, we actually had four guys go over 2,000 yards.
Oh, did we? Okay.
Yeah. But that's the last time. It's been 5 years.
I would have thought it was longer. But yeah, anyway.
Chuba Hubbard, a quarterback, yeah. Malcolm Perry from Navy, J.K. Dobbins, and Jonathan Taylor. Some serious players there.
Yeah. Well, I was way off on that one. But I'll get my picks right. Iowa State, Arizona State, Big 12. That game is what? Is that on campus? It's not on campus.
No,
right?
It's in Dallas. Arlington.
Dallas. That's right. They play it in Dallas. High noon on Saturday. Again, when was the last time you cared about the Big 12 championship game? Even a couple years ago when TCU was in it and then went to the playoff, they lost it and it didn't matter. It matters now. One of these two's going in. Arizona State picks 16th out of 16 in the Big 12, is in the title game. And Ames, we always love you. They like the Bush Light with me. They know what I'm talking about. The Cyclones know what's up. Sun Devils giving two. Ross.
Bush Light with a shot of their famous water. Right? There you go. Arizona State is on too much of a tear, Dan. Sam Levitt, quarterback. Cam Scadabaugh at running back. They have just been on a roll. What, they won 5-6 straight, I feel like.
Since the Cincy loss, they've been going, yeah.
Yeah, so it's been impressive to watch what Kenny Dillingham and those guys have done there, and I just can't pick against them. So give me the Sun Devils to cover that, get in the playoff, and I tell you what, Dan, I wouldn't want to play Arizona State in the playoff right now. They are, like I said, they're as hot as any team in the country, and I would not want to play them. They would be probably the 12th seed. Maybe they squeak into it like an 11 or 10 situation. I guess there's an outside shot they could jump Boise State in the rankings and get the bye, but probably not. So they'll be playing at, if they win, they'll be playing at State College or South Bend. You know, I would want to play them. So give me the Sun Devils.
I am with you. That's a bad matchup for Iowa State. the genius of Jim Haycock and the defense, Matt Campbell, there has been to play a 4-2-5 against the wide open spreads of the Big 12 and to limit explosive plays and to guard the cover the perimeter with speed. They don't do well. This team in particular does not do well against the run. They are 15th out of 16 in rush defense. And guess what? Arizona State does very well with Cam Scataboo. Pound it on you. And so I think this just sets up well for them to control the ball, shove the ball down the field, win a relatively low-scoring game, and certainly cover the number.
One other thing in line with that that I found really interesting, the two losses for Iowa State this year, Texas Tech and to Kansas, they faced two of the best running backs in the conference and in the country with Taj Brooks and Devin Neal. They gave up over 110 yards rushing to both of those guys. So this is a recipe for disaster for them, going up against a team that has another premier running back, another one of the guys that's one of the best in the country. I don't see a reason why Scataboo doesn't have a big game here against Iowa State. And Iowa State started the season kind of strong defensively, but they've gotten banged up. So I 100% agree with both of you guys on this. I do not see a world where they can slow him down because he is a ball of fury when he's running the ball.
Yeah, and Sam Levitt is a great story and continues with Dillingham's ability to work quarterbacks. And that goes back to Bo Nix when he was an assistant at Oregon, like turning that around. And their only loss in September was at Cincinnati, and Sam Levitt was out that game.
Right.
So they haven't lost with Sam Levitt since they lost to Texas Tech in a game back in September. I've been picking Arizona. I've been on a heater with Arizona State for a while. I think they've been my lock of the week about three or four times, and I'm going to stick with them to win this game. Only 2 points. But I think it's going to be a very exciting game. And when you've got that playoff thing laying on the line, so interesting. Also is this, I'm very interested to see what happens here. Could Arizona State, as you said, Ross, jump up in the seedings? It doesn't say the fifth automatic bid has to be a 12 seed. Right. We just always assumed it because we thought, well, the group of five champ will be like the 20th best team in the country in the rankings, and they'll get projected up. But do you put, let's say it's Arizona State, because they're at 15, right?
Yeah.
And Alabama is at 11 in the ranking part, in the rankings where they would pull this. Do you put an 11-2 Arizona State team that just beat a really good Iowa State team, went through a very good conference, the Big 12, that is not getting the respect from the committee it deserves. So maybe that'll be its downfall, but should. I mean, they beat BYU, Kansas State recently. And if you want to go to, like, last year's committee cared about whether a quarterback could play in a game, how about whether a quarterback did play in a game? And do you put them at 11, which throws Alabama into the 12th spot in the playoff seeding?
In the dash, that's exactly what I had, except I had Miami, not Alabama. But right. I had Arizona State number 11.
I don't think the Big 12 champ should just be 12.
Mm. Right. Yeah.
So now everyone's always said, well, that 5 seed is a great spot because you get to play someone easy and then you play. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Might not be that easy.
Wouldn't want to play Arizona State or Alabama.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to play either of them. You might rather play my thing with Alabama, they can beat any team in this field. Alabama has proven they can beat anybody. They can also lose to anybody. Almost anyone in college football.
For sure.
But that's a scary team. You could say they don't deserve it, whatever. And I would say the same thing about the other clubs. But if that's the last team, they can beat you. It's not like the last at-large bid is just this team. You're like, oh, they stink. Alabama can beat you, and so I would, for the sake of it, I would feel maybe better if Arizona State wins this game. Particularly sitting, if you think they're 15 now, they take care of business against Iowa State. You consider that Sam Levitt miss. Do you pop them up and move everyone back a little bit? Be pretty interesting to see. So. That's it, though. But I'm taking Arizona State if I didn't say so. SEC, 4 p.m. ABC. Game is in Atlanta. Georgia, Texas. This is a rematch. Georgia defeated Texas by 15 points in Austin. And now the game's in Atlanta, and Texas is a 2.5-point favorite. Make it make sense, Pat Forty.
I can't. And that's why I'm picking Georgia.
Yeah.
I don't get that. The game they played in October, Georgia just shredded Texas's offensive line. It's pretty much the same guys, except Kelvin Banks is actually questionable. Their best offensive lineman. Hurt his ankle against Texas A&M, barely played in that game. Didn't even dress out second half. I'm looking at this, and I have labeled Georgia a casual team. But I have to think it's time for the casual to end. This is the SEC championship in your backyard in Atlanta against a team that's good and talented and rated ahead of you, but you already beat. You can beat them again. I think Georgia wins, perhaps handily.
I'm going the other way. Hard to beat a team twice, and I kind of think that Texas is going to get Georgia here. I don't have too much faith in it, but Dan, I got to catch up in these picks
gotta
some
start
way.
Fading some people, yeah.
You know, so give me the horns, hook 'em.
That was the least enthusiastic hook'em I've ever heard.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
Cool.
I'm thrilled about it. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Hook'em.
Okay. Cool. Hook'em. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm emphatically going to go with Georgia as well. To agree with Pat. One thing, Texas hasn't been challenged as much as Georgia. The few tough games that Quinn Ewers has been placed in, I would include Vanderbilt, Texas A&M, and the Georgia matchup. He had multiple turnovers in all of these games. I can't trust him to not turn the ball over again. And one thing that hasn't really been talked about just nationally, I feel like no one's giving Carson Beck the respect for the fact that the past few difficult matchups that he saw against Georgia Tech and against Tennessee, that he's played so much cleaner. He's looked like his old version of himself. Now, I might be jumping ahead of myself here by saying that version of him is going to show up against Texas, against one of the most disruptive defenses in the country. But I would think that I'd ride the hot hand at quarterback, not one that had two turnovers against Texas A&M. And of course, like you said, Pat, we already saw this play out. Georgia should win this.
Yeah, if you give it, I mean, this is a 17.5-point swing from a result to the, I'll take Georgia, as I kind of alluded to earlier. And look, the dirty secret here is Texas does not have a victory over a top 25 team. They're number two in the country. They're 11-1, but look at did they have some decent wins? Yeah, I think the Texas A&M game's a tough win. Michigan maybe isn't that bad, but this was a schedule that played out perfectly. They crushed Florida when other people weren't. It stopped
Florida when they had a Yale transfer playing quarterback.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, they had Colorado State at Michigan, San Antonio, Louisiana Monroe, Mississippi State, Oklahoma. They lose to Georgia by 15. They beat Vandy, Florida, you're right, with the Yale transfer. Arkansas is a 10-point game, Kentucky and an A&M. And people are talking about other people's schedules.
Yeah, right.
I'm not saying they shouldn't be in the playoff, but like, what do we have here that suggests that they're going to go into Atlanta and do this? So if you're going to give me Georgia points, I'm taking Georgia. So we shall see. Big Ten, 8:00. I guess nobody wants to attend this game. Aren't tickets like Groupon level at this point?
$13.
No, price. Penn State fans aren't driving over.
Get in price, $13. No. Dan, we said it on the last pod. Yeah, I mean, they know these teams are both in. They're going to have to potentially travel to the quarters, semis, and national championship game.
I get it. I get it. I just thought there'd be some Penn State fans. I don't know. It's just they haven't been there in a while. I get the Oregon fans like, what? No. And Indy's not easy to get to. It's not Atlanta. They're in a million flights.
Or Chicago.
Or Chicago.
They have it there.
But they don't have a dome in Chicago. You know who has a dome? Detroit.
True.
Put it up in Detroit.
Is the new stadium in Chicago going to be domed? It's not, is it?
New stadium. It is not, I don't believe, although they have like three plans.
Yeah.
You want a good job drawing stadium plans for new Bear stadiums.
Yeah.
Move the game to Detroit. We got a nice big airport. Come on now. They're addicted to that steak and shake.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him. Steak and Shake's good. Oregon's given 3.5, 8 o'clock CBS. Ross?
I've been going back and forth on this one, Dan. I don't know who to pick, and I was going to pick the opposite of what you guys pick, and I'm going first, so that's a problem.
How about I go first out of fairness?
You know, that should be how it is. Thank you, Dan.
Oregon. Yeah. I'm taking Oregon. I'm taking Oregon in this game. It is indoors. They're going to have the full ability to play the offense they want to play. Dan Lanning's got it rolling. They haven't had a brutal schedule. They're prime for this thing. And I'm taking Oregon. There you go. So you guys can fade that if you want. You can do whatever you want.
Go ahead, Ross.
I'm up next.
Yeah. One day. Now he wants this.
Well, I wonder. I guess I got to pick Nittany Lions to cover, right? Just going against old Dan here. Give me the Nittany Lions. It's possible. Got to get that running game going. Got the good tight end, Tyler Warren. So maybe they can come through for me.
Yeah, I should be going against Dan myself, but I'm not going against the Ducks here. I do think Penn State probably has the two best players in the game in Abdul Carter and Tyler Warren, but Oregon has the best team, better quarterback. They're on an absolute roll, playing with a ton of confidence. And I think they really want to finish off proving not just that they belong in the Big Ten, but that they're the best in the Big Ten. So I am all in on the Ducks.
Yeah, picking Oregon is the safe bet because they've been so hot. They've played as one of the most balanced teams in college football, where you just look at the talent that they have on their D-line, at linebacker, in their secondary. Offensive line's been phenomenal since a little bit of a shaky start, and the receivers continue to have an impact. And of course, you know how good Dylan Gabriel is. I'm going with Oregon, but one thing might play in favor for Ross here. Oregon quietly, their run defense has not been very good down the stretch. It's very weird. Their pass rush is phenomenal, and they've got some really good defensive tackles. Derek Harmon's great, but they are like one of in the bottom half in the country in EPA per rush allowed. I know that we scoff at bringing up statistics on this show, but it's something just to pay attention to, that we know that Penn State runs the ball more effectively than anybody. They've got two fantastic backs, and they use Tyler Warren. If there's a path and James Franklin can get over the hump, it could happen, but I'm sticking with Oregon too.
Did you just invoke the Environmental Protection Agency? Or different EPA, I assume.
A different EPA, expected points added.
There we go. All right.
So what we got next? Clemson versus SMU. Big game. Everyone's going to be watching that. A lot of Alabama SMU fans right now. Mustangs giving 2.5, games in Charlotte, 8 p.m. on ABC. Whew, who would I pick on this? I got to go first, right? See, so now I wasn't thinking.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll take, you know what? I'll give you guys a little. Clemson just lost. It's in Charlotte. I'm taking Clemson 2.5. Give me 2.5 in Clemson. I like the points. They got something to play for. Come on, Dabo. Come on, man. Little old Clemson. Little old Clemson against that mighty SMU.
Yeah, mighty SMU. I'm taking SMU here for a lot of the same reasons I took. Oregon. I think that they want to finish this deal. They were undefeated in the league, still doubted by several people. There's still a fear that they may drop all the way out of the playoff if they don't win. They're showing up locked and loaded. They're undefeated with Kevin Jennings starting at quarterback. And most importantly, their run defense is really good, and Clemson has to be able to run the ball. Cade Klubnik is not a drop and throw 50 times guy. If he does, he'll turn it over three. So Phil Maffa needs to run, and I think SMU can stop him from running. So pony up.
Well, I would have picked Clemson here, but Dan picked Clemson. So I'm going with the ponies too. Yeah, ponies to cover, and screw you, Dan.
Also, I have to say, I have to fulfill my prophecy from August that SMU would win the ACC.
That's true. That's right. That's true. Yeah.
That'd be a lame way to go out, picking against him in the AC championship game.
Really, yeah.
I'm going to go against you here, though. I'm going to agree with Dan. I I really like what SMU has done. Their defensive line has been so disruptive. One of the best defensive lines in the ACC, maybe even arguably the best. But I can't help but focus on one, how Clemson has been a little bit more challenged. They were really close to pulling out that win, or at least taking that South Carolina game to overtime if it wasn't for that late turnover. One thing that stood out that didn't really tangibly get noticed was how much disruption that they created on Lenore Sellers. Lenore Sellers is just so freaking hard to tackle that it didn't matter. I don't know if Kevin Jennings is able to break tackles that same way. So this Clemson defensive line could get home, and I'm hoping that they do, and that's enough for them to win this game.
All right, locks of the week. We have four other championship games. We'll let everybody else pick a lock, and I'll take whatever's the last one. How's that?
Oh, sounds good.
That fair for you guys?
Very sporting. Very sporting.
I know.
So go ahead. Who wants to go first?
I'll go.
Shouldn't I go?
Go ahead, Ross. Go ahead.
We're trying to help you.
I have no shot here. Give me the first one. Of course, I haven't looked at all these games either. You know, let's see, Dan. What we got G5-wise here?
What about that Tulane?
That's the one that's sticking out. Yeah, probably more than any of them. But you know what? Actually, I'm going to go down to get a little Jacksonville State action. Jacksonville State, 5.5-point favorites at home against Western Kentucky. I am told that Jacksonville, Alabama is the smallest city with a division, with an FBS football program. You know, I don't know if that's true or not, but it's like 7,000 people there. And they'll be hosting this championship game, Conference USA championship game against Western Kentucky, who just beat them on a last-minute field goal last week. Again, tough to beat a team twice. Give me Jacksonville State to cover the 5.5. Rich Rod.
Yeah, beat them on a 50-yard field goal with 3 seconds left. But thank you for not taking the Tulane Army game, because I will gladly take that one. And I'm taking Army here. You're getting 6, I believe. You're at home. And the Joe DeLeon theory on UNLV Boise certainly applies here, because the temperature is going to be in the 20s. The boys from New Orleans are not exactly going to be walking in saying, this is awesome. And it is going to be a mash face mask game against Army. You must tackle. You must hit. It's going to be a physical, brutal game in 20-degree weather. And John Summerall is going to have a line of people wanting to talk to him about other jobs as soon as this game ends, and probably have talked to him some before this game has occurred. And that's usually a recipe for an unfocused coach. Cadets, Army, go.
I like that one. You stole the one that I wanted, obviously. I don't have any analysis for this, but I'm going to take Miami of Ohio -1.5 versus Ohio. I'm basing this purely off of my senior year. We played against Ohio. Nice little stadium. The food sucked. There wasn't a whole lot going on around the campus. Didn't like the vibes. Just going with Miami of Ohio off of that.
All this good analysis from you on these games. And then
One didn't you like? You didn't like Ohio?
Yeah, I didn't like University of Ohio. The hotel was old. It was kind of decrepit.
It's Ohio University. Like beautiful town. Party town.
Overrated.
Wow.
They kicked the crap out of us. I'm kind of laughing.
That's a miss.
Here.
Look, you can bash. Like, you know I love the Mac. Mac, you know I love you. You know I love you. One of my pride moments, I've been to all 12 campuses.
Whoa.
I know. Some in the trenches right there, man. That's some serious. Some of the campuses, not exactly Pepperdine. Let's put it that way. Some of the campuses, industrial Midwest is what thoughts, but not Ohio and Miami. These are the two best campuses. If you didn't like that, Joe, true. Boy, do I got a few places to show you.
Admittedly, didn't get to see the campus. I'm basing this solely off of the bad locker room we were in and the bad hotel that we stayed in. That's all I got to see.
Okay. You can't have a good time in Athens. You just got it all wrong.
I've only been to half of the campuses. I feel bad now.
Put some effort in. Put some effort in. And UMass is joining. So now we have 13. Mm. There's two Amherst now, which is funny. Buffalo is in Amherst. Anyway, which game do I get? Who'd you guys not pick?
It's Marshall, Louisiana.
Marshall, Louisiana. Oh, I got a lot of insight on this one.
Louisiana's giving 5.5. I like Charlie Huff. Nice guy. Coaching the Thunder and Herd. Where's this thing getting played?
In Louisiana.
In Louisiana. But is Charlie Huff leaving? What's the latest update on that? We got any info? Can anyone help me?
No help info. Me with this pick?
No one's going to give me anything.
I think after the game, we'll probably know. But it's going to be after the game, buddy.
I don't care. Thunder and Herd. We are Marshall. I'm taking the 5.5.
Okay.
If you take that as gambling advice, you're absolutely nuts.
Yeah, there's one guy that was betting parlays on our locks, and he was doing pretty good for a while. We haven't heard from him for a few weeks.
No, yeah. I appreciate he doesn't get mad when it doesn't work. Yeah,
right.
We appreciate you. He puts like $5 down.
Yeah, no, small bet.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to win. I'm going to be drinking Busch Light the rest of the year. It's going to be great.
We're like, rest of the week? What do you mean rest of the year?
Yeah, right. It's no case. It's a 30-30. Bush Light. They don't make Busch Lights in 24s because they know you need the extra sixer.
It can be bought in 212s if need be.
Well, we'll see how this goes out. We'll see what I come up with. May change my beer choice. Maybe, you know, support a local business or something. I like Busch Light. Anyway, that's where we're at. That's our show. It's probably gone on way too long anyway, as it usually does. Awesome time of year. Enjoy the games, the frenzy, and we'll be back after the selection to sort out all the screaming, crying, wailing, and get pumped for the first real playoff in this sport. Honestly, it is a great time in college football. And we will talk to you then.